The Five Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Southeastern desires to equip pastors, missionaries, theologians, scholars, and other believers to obey the commands of Jesus to make disciples anywhere and everywhere God calls them to go. They have a wide range of degrees at many levels. Whether you want to become a pastor, missionary, or seminary professor, Southeastern can provide you with the high-quality education and training that you need. Southeastern even provides a number of distance education options for those who are interested but cannot relocate. To learn more, visit sebts.edu/5LQ. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ and apply today to begin your education. Use the code 5LQ to receive a discount on your application for any degree. Again, that's sebts.edu/5LQ. And use the code 5LQ to receive a discount on your application for any degree Southeastern offers. Welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins.
What?
And Kevin Spratt.
Word.
Today, we are talking about servant leadership. So that's a bit of a buzzword. It's something that gets tossed around fairly regularly. It's generally thought of as a positive thing, but I have not heard too many people have an in-depth conversation that sort of breaks down what it is, why it matters, what sets it apart from any other kind of, like, what is the alternative? What's non-servant leadership look like? So we're gonna try to sort through this a little bit to just see what we can kind of figure out and be helpful in terms of what it is, how to do it, those kinds of things. So first question, very open-ended. Todd and Kevin, you guys can wrestle over who takes this one first. How would you define servant leadership? Not all at once, guys.
Not all at once. That wasn't that long of a break. Golly, give me.
Gosh, there's so many things that flood my mind when I think about servant leadership. It's really a posture as much as anything else. It's understanding that you're on a level playing field. It doesn't matter what your positional title is. As much as the posture that you take. I mean, yes, positionally, there are some of us who are placed over people, oversight, and have a directional, missional vision charge there. But even those people in the positions that they play and the roles that they play can take a posture of, when I serve in implementing a vision or crafting vision or crafting mission or strategy for whatever, I'm taking the posture of serving a greater purpose. Like, I'm serving those who I lead in that, but then also understanding that for vision to be implemented, for it to be really be cast or strategy to happen, that I've got to be in the details of that. I've got to take not just the opportunity to cast that vision or to lead directionally and positionally, but I've got to serve in the mundane. I've got to serve in each one of those areas. So it's posturing yourself and positioning yourself and saying, everyone serves a role and there's no one role that's greater than the next.
I mean, I immediately think of, you know, Matthew 20, where Jesus calls the disciples together and says, hey, you know, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them and their higher officials exercise authority over us. So, you know, not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to be great must be your servant. Whoever wants to be first must be, you know, a slave. And that's great. And most pastors can kind of pull that out of their hat. But the reality is, you came into this world self-serving and you're going to leave this world self-serving because you're human. So hopefully you go out of it a little less self-serving than when you came in. Everybody loves to talk about servant leadership until somebody treats them like one.
That's right.
And then, you know, that's not as fun. So I think, you know, Kevin is hitting the nail on the head when it's just talking about a posture.
Yeah.
And I think it's moment by moment decisions. It's moment by moment choices. That's what leadership is. And, you know, if you can humble yourself and put yourself in that position and remind yourself that, you know, it's, again, I hate to be cheesy, but, you know, your legacy is in other people. It's not in yourself. Your fruit really does grow in other people's trees. And so I know you guys are tired of hearing that, but it's true. It's true. And if you want to be successful as a leader, it's who is succeeding you is all the difference. Like, who is going to take over your spot? That's what you always need to be thinking about. So that's how I would define that.
I think in some ways, servant leadership gets it could potentially get overcomplicated. And I think, I mean, you brought up the example of Christ sort of as the paramount leader, came not to be served, but to serve. And then you get into, I think it's Philippians where it talks about consider others before yourself, put others' interests before yourself. Who are you setting up to succeed? Who are you setting up to succeed you? I mean, these are not complicated concepts. They're not easy to do, but I think that posture, Kevin used the word posture, Todd highlighted it, and I think I totally agree that it is a stance of coming into it going, whose good are you working for? Are you working for the good of the mission and the vision? Are you working for the good of those you lead? Or are you working for the good and the status of yourself? And I think that's sort of the dividing point between servant leadership and other kinds of leadership.
Really good question too then, really, is what are the marks of a servant leadership that differ from stereotypical A-type leadership? So, you know, the thing
feedback.
That I...
Do you say feedback?
Yeah, sorry.
No, I think that, you know, the thing that boils down for me is that answering this question, what really differs? Where are the marks of the leader that reflect this? And I had the opportunity to teach a lesson this last week for our Wednesday night service, and Galatians 5:22-23 came to mind. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Like that, and I heard a pastor one time say that what's interesting about that passage is that it doesn't say fruits, it says fruit. Like if you list those out, the image that, especially the image that you get from like a John chapter 5 where, maybe John chapter 15, where Jesus is talking about the vine and the branches and the fruit, like that it's talking about a cluster of grapes. Like you can't have one without the other. Like you don't just go and eat one grape. You have the fruit and characteristics of all those things. And I think that, you know, if you look back at the Great Commission and the Great Commandment, like our charge is to love one another just as Christ loved us. And so I think that what, you know, it's a posture, right? So there's a posture there, but it's a genuineness. I'm reminded of a Friends episode. My wife and I are watching a lot of reruns of Friends, and there was an episode where...
I'm sorry.
There's an
wow! Like, what did you do, Kevin?
I like the show.
What
I'm
did
sorry.
You do?
I'm sorry. I like the show. It's great to fall asleep
Pivot.
But one episode that I'm particularly thinking about is one where Phoebe tries to where Joey says there's no selfless.
What has happened
act.
To our podcast?
I don't know, but there's one episode where Joey says, there's not one selfless act. And I'm like, I don't know about that. And so Phoebe spends the entire episode trying to show him a selfless act that she doesn't even get benefit from. And so, I mean, I think that if you kind of couple that with, you know, just understanding the fruit of the Spirit, and, you know, there's a posture, there's a gentleness, and there are those just a genuineness to really serve somebody.
Todd, I apologize for not giving Kevin the heads up that it's Seinfeld references only on the podcast. That was my
That's
bad
right.
as the
There's
as
not
the host.
One Seinfeld episode. I watch those regularly. There's not one Seinfeld episode that would
no,
adequately.
Which may, I mean, we could probably
no,
riff on that.
That's
like
definitely the most self-serving show.
Right. That would be the opposite.
That would be the narcissistic group of people.
That's the next podcast.
A couple of the marks that come to mind for me, just in terms of, and in terms of marks of a leader, just on a day-to-day basis, is does the leader share praise? So if there is success, do they share that credit? And we've talked about this in so many different episodes, but sharing the credit across the team, across the people who are led, the people who contributed heavily to that, rather than sort of being the face of the credit, sharing it around and saying, you know, this person is key to this. We wouldn't have done it without them. This person was key to it. Another is delegation. We did an episode not too long ago on delegating work versus dumping work on people. And good delegation sets people up to succeed. It sets people up with what they need. And it gives them the opportunity for success rather than, again, claiming all that success. So that idea of putting others in a position to succeed and then giving them the credit they are due. That's servant leadership, because you are still ultimately steering things, but you're leading other people in their responsibilities and putting them in a position to do well, giving them the resources they need, and then giving them the credit they deserve when things go well.
All right, I'm going to bring out two. And it was basically because I already started to bring them out before, so I have to use them now. Feedback. I think if you give a leader feedback, somebody that's over you, how they respond to that is, or how they respond to criticism and feedback, especially, or critique and feedback, because, you know, some of them, a self-serving leader, their status is threatened or their turf is threatened. But a servant leader is going to, you know, at least, even if there's, they're going to find some truth in it. They're going to take something out of that to heart. You know, even if it was just something that, that was less factual and more emotional, they're going to draw something out of that, and have a conversation with the person. The other thing is how they give feedback. Do they take the time to invest in someone by giving them intentional feedback? You know, one of the things I hope that everybody knows by now that we think is foundational is that feedback loop, you know, in connection with our belief that transformation happens in somebody's life through knowledge, experience, and coaching. Well, the best place to do that is, you know, on the job and in the experience. And somebody might have tremendous knowledge of a given area and even hopefully way more knowledge than you. And if you're a good leader, you're going to let them lead in that because that's their expertise. However, you're in a position to offer some great feedback and some great coaching in nuances of that task or nuances of that responsibility that they've been given.
I think one other thing that comes to mind, we're talking about the differences between a servant leader and sort of that stereotypical A-type leader is, you know, envisioning somebody on the other side listening to this thinking, I would like to be a servant leader, I would like to lead in that way. How do you avoid being a total pushover as a servant leader, though? Because serving sounds soft, and yet leadership requires a certain amount of strength, and you have to protect the people under you. You have to protect the vision. So let me throw that out there to you guys as sort of a follow-up question. How do you lead as a servant leader without being sort of a softy pushover who gives ground and those kinds of things?
Well, it's choosing. I mean, it's choosing which of those things that you're going to accept. What are you going to use as a teachable moment? I mean, there's a difference between being humble and allowing yourself to be humiliated. I don't think that, you know, you do that as a leader. That isn't servant leadership. You're actually doing people a great disservice if you, you know, never respond or never push back or never, hold them to something. So yeah, I think it's, humility, the humbleness.
Yeah. I think there's something about stewardship here as well, because if you think of stewarding, a steward is there to manage and protect somebody else's goods or work. And so, you know, as a leader, you are stewarding vision, you are stewarding people. If these are God's people and God's vision, then it is your job to protect them. If somebody comes in and has ulterior motives or is going to do something harmful, a steward is still serving the master, but protecting those goods, those people, the fellow staff, the vision, whatever it is. And so being a servant and being weak are not in any way synonymous.
Yeah. And I would add to that integrity. I mean, if you really are a pastor, I mean, because a lot of things, I think sometimes we automatically assume that this deals with a pastor situation, right? I mean, it's how are you being a servant leader, pastor? How are you shepherding your staff? I mean, if we really do believe in the whole countenance of Scripture, you know, from beginning to end, Genesis to Revelation, you know, it's an integrity issue, right? I mean, you talk about, you know, it's stewarding people, what Barma said, and then, you know, it's in response to how you lead people, but it's in everything that you do.
Well, let's move to our third question, and we've touched on some of these things, but I specifically want to turn the magnifying glass around, because self-evaluation is one of the hardest things anybody can do, because we are always blind to our own weaknesses. We don't, you know, the essence of a blind spot is that we don't see it. So How can someone accurately self-evaluate whether they are leading in a serving way? So how do you evaluate your own servant leadership?
Is there an evaluation for pride? Anybody think of an evaluation for pride?
Are you awake?
Right, I mean, exactly.
I think that's the starting point. Well,
and that's, you know, as I looked at that question, you know, self-evaluation, like, am I too prideful to clean a toilet? I mean, I worked at a conference center and there were 20 of us on staff. And, you know, when it came time to flip a weekend, go from one weekend to the next, you know, you get short staffed or whatever. And I was the rec and technical director. I was supposed to be on a boat or in a field playing games, but was I conscious enough to go and pick up a toilet brush and scrub a toilet if we needed to? I mean, that's the, was I too prideful in my job and this is just my responsibilities? And are you really literally willing to get your hands dirty? I mean, that's one thing that I've looked at.
And I think, I'll go ahead, Don.
I mean, you know, from a pride standpoint in particular, is it, you know, the more right someone sounds, the more upset I get, or when the origin of the idea is more important than, you know, than the idea itself. That's when you know you've got pride has taken over big time. If you ask yourself those things and those things begin to sound familiar.
Right. When people are grabbing at credit or you are grabbing at credit instead of just latching onto the best possible idea, the best possible way of doing things, regardless of where it came from.
Yeah. Beware of doing things on principle. Well, it's the principle of the thing, is it?
If the principle is, it's my idea.
Yeah.
The principle here is that I came up with the idea, so it's probably the best one. That's the principle we're working on here, right?
Yeah.
I think Kevin brought up the fruits of the Spirit earlier, and that's when I saw this question. Actually, I wrote this question, so that's can't be disingenuous. The fruits of the Spirit were the first thing that came to mind because I feel like is there a better list of standards by which one should hold themselves than those things? And probably asking somebody else to hold you to those things well. So am I leading in a loving, joyful, peaceful, patient, kind, good, faithful, gentle, self-controlled way or not? You know, because as you run through that list, inevitably you're going to see areas where you're like, oh, I'm an F minus. Like I fell off that. I failed in that one. And so you need other people to hold you accountable to that and to give them permission to give you hard feedback. But I think that list of standards is probably the best one for servant leaders. Am I loving the people under me? Am I kind? Am I patient? You know, am I self-controlled when I begin to get frustrated? Those kinds of things.
Well, and I think what you hit on accountability really is the level of self-evaluation. Like if I really want to work on this, am I willing to let somebody ask the hard questions of me? Yeah. Am I really willing to allow to be held accountable to somebody if I am a jerk? And finding the right people who can speak truth and life into you in the situations is probably the better form of self-evaluation. I think that when it comes to servant leadership and being humble and integrity and having a good posture, we are going to have way too many self-biases.
Yeah.
And I think that finding somebody that can hold us accountable is probably the better piece. So
one of the key elements of self-evaluation is recognizing your need for somebody else to evaluate you. Because the starting point can't be, I will do an accurate job. The starting point has to be, I won't do an accurate job. So somebody else needs to come in and tell me when I smell bad and when I need to clean this mess up. Well, because I won't recognize my own stink.
Yeah.
It is. I think it boils down, pride is really the sister of fear. And we did a whole episode on lies leaders believe, which deals a lot with fear. It deals a lot with insecurity. And, you know, as you walk through different elements of your leadership, you can really ask, you know, what am I afraid of in this situation? Am I afraid of a person? Am I afraid of exposure? Am I afraid of, you know, what the future holds? I think those two things go together and can be toxic.
So speaking of lies and leaders, Who are some of the best models of servant leadership you've seen?
Todd, does anybody come to mind for you? I mean, it can be somebody from your own past, or I mean, here's the rule. Since this isn't Sunday school and we're not 10, you don't get to say Jesus. So anybody else come to mind?
Yeah, one of my mentors, his name was Warren Benson, and he was like 3 days older than Moses when I had him in seminary. He came in once a week. He came in on Mondays and he taught 3 classes. He was literally in his 80s. But he had team taught with Howard Hendricks at Dallas Theological. If you don't know who Howard Hendricks is, please Google him. A lot of pithy sayings that you'll hear from the generation in their 40s and 50s right now, pretty much all go back to Hendricks, and that probably includes you, from Hendricks went to somebody else. But anyway, long story short there, he, like, his whole life was taking people and bringing them up, building them up beyond where he was. He had, he had so many stories. And, you know, one of the things that used to frustrate me more than anything was you would hear guys in our class, either make fun of him before he got there, or, you know, blow the class off as is a complete waste of time. All he does is tell stories. I mean, he had tons of case studies in class, everything like that. But a lot of it was his stories, and a lot of it was him walking alongside of the students who, you know, were really engaged in there. But his whole life, from the way I saw him interact with professors to how he talked about his family to who he talked about and who he had been around and engaged with, he was never, you know, the star up front. But he was always that person who, was lifting other people up and actively engaging in their life and helping them curate, good leadership principles and good things in their life, and take some of those things out, cut other things out.
I think one of the reasons this question it can be hard to answer is because I think the most servant-hearted leaders are ones that most people will not know. So if Kevin shares, if I share, which I'm sure both of us will, it's not going to be somebody who you've heard of, because upfront leaders, it's not that they don't have humility, but that's not what they're known for. People who are marked by servant leadership often have incredible influence in non-public ways. So like what you just described, Todd. And so this is more about sharing stories of people who exhibit these qualities than it is, you know, oh, here's a famous person, you should go read their book about servant leadership, because that rarely happens.
Counterintuitive.
Yeah, exactly.
Somewhat counterintuitive, yeah.
So the answer that I come up with is there's a guy named Brad Nelson who was one of the youth pastors when I was junior high and high school, and he still serves at the church where I grew up. So he's been there for, he's got to be 25 plus years now. He now works in their leading short-term missions. But he was just one of those guys who, he was always present. He was always available. He was always joyful. And I think that's something that servant leadership, there's not sort of this morose, like, okay, fine, I'll go do the job. Like he had a joy and an energy about him, whether it was a service project or a missions trip or a Sunday morning worship time or whatever it was. He wasn't afraid to do the small things. He wasn't afraid to, you know, paint the youth room and do those things. I mean, he was involved in every aspect of things. And his humility, his energy, his joy, his accessibility were things that impacted just about everybody who came through the room, because it showed, I mean, you knew he was in charge. You know, Brad ran the youth ministry and everybody knew that, but he did not run it with a heavy hand, and he made people want to be there, and he gave people opportunities to lead and serve, and he put people in positions to enjoy themselves and to do all the different things that a youth ministry should do well. And so he stands out in my mind as somebody who he made serving, he made involvement in ministry a joy for everybody around him, including the people who worked on staff with him, who volunteered under him, and then the students in the youth group. That to me is a depiction of student leadership in a lot of ways. Not student leadership, servant leadership. Also student leadership. Both.
Both and. Yeah. I've been racking my brain. And I think you're right. There are definitely those people who come to mind that I think of a guy named Harold Bellinder that worked at me at the conference center. I just feel like sometimes working at a camp, you see lots of opportunities for servant. You see lots of opportunities for servant leadership. And so, you know, especially as you think of it in the real physical form of cleaning toilets and doing really dirty work. He was a guy that was the camp director, but then jumped in on a number of different occasions, doing lots of different things. In particular, a pastor that I have a ton of respect for is a guy named Bob Russell. He led a rather large church in Louisville, Kentucky. But just of what I know and what I've seen of him and having met him a couple times, he seems like a really solid servant leader. And he did a great job of, you know, Todd talked about succession planning, and he was one of the ones that came to mind and that did a great job of leading Southeast in Louisville to a point to where he passed off really well and had a great succession plan there. Mm-hmm. And
after starting it in his, his family room, being a small group.
Yeah. He took over the church when it was a couple hundred people and he was 22 years old and it was 18,000 people when he retired. So, the same point.
Yeah. And I'd say I look at that and kind of look at, you know, to Barnabas's point, you don't really, it seems counterintuitive to think of those leaders, but I think that the churches that continue to have, and the organizations really that continue to have lasting leadership influence beyond their particular personalities are probably evidence of pastors and leaders who've done a great job of setting up, you know, their organization as a place to say, this is a great place to be a part of, to be a member of, if you're talking specifically to a church context, because they have a large lasting impact beyond just themselves. And I think that that's probably, those couple people, you know, the people that have an impact beyond just your day-to-day interactions with them, I think we'll have some of that.
All right, let's hit our last question. We always want to end with, generally speaking, we want to end with some advice, some sense of like what people can do with this. So what are practical steps people can take to grow in both the spirit of servant leadership and then habits of serving rather than commanding? So practical steps to servant leadership. What are some ways people can go about that?
I mean, the thing that comes to my mind specifically is what is the reality TV show? Undercover Boss, is to put yourself in those situations, right? Is to put yourself in the situations where you're serving in the capacity of all the people that you lead intentionally. Mm-hmm. To take, a day once a month to, you know, if you're a pastor, to serve just completely in a day in student ministry, or to do custodial work or to set up chairs or whatever. I think there's a level of physically, you know, doing something physically that or even just spiritually with that group of people that serve you and let them lead you. Them lead you for a change. It would be one practical way to do that.
I think it's really establishing some key disciplines. So I mean, you know, ultimately you want these things to become habit, but you're going to have them as disciplines before they become habit. If you're not, you know, naturally inclined to give feedback, then you need to begin to frame meetings in such a way or frame, like whether you're walking through, hey, you know, what happened at this event or what happened at this training, or you always want to begin to put frameworks around meetings and events and different things so that you can be sure that at least somewhere you're taking down some notes. You know, you're intentional about taking notes to give that person feedback. If you're not natural at that, you have to do that. If you're not natural at asking people about their personal life, you know, you need to put notes on your calendar to make sure that you remember people's birthdays or their anniversaries or things like that. Or I guess you can just rely on Facebook.
When we had Michael Kelly on the podcast a little while back, he gave a really good example of what you're just talking about, Todd, in terms of sort of putting things on your calendar that are just practical habits. Because when he took over leading a team of people, one of the guys on his team said, you know, it'd be really good if you develop the habit of practicing walk around leadership, because Michael had moved from editor to leader. And so he was used to holding up in his office and doing projects. He's like, well, what's walk around leadership? And the guy's like, well, it's when you walk around and talk to people. And so he actually would block it out on his calendar to be like, all right, 9 o'clock, I'm going to go kind of take a stroll around my team's area and I'm going to pop in. I'm going to say hey to people, ask them how they're doing, those personal questions, just that engagement. And so it was developing a habit of a very practical way to care about people. And that stood out to me, because so often we want to take intentionality out of relational things, because that doesn't it doesn't feel organic and natural, but it's how those things happen. If you say, I want to get better at it, I need to intentionally do relational things. And that's something probably everybody needs work on, unless you're just one of those bubbly personalities who's constantly talking, in which case you probably need to put on your calendar, go do work.
I think that's huge. I think that's the, you know, to go have a meal with a group of people, or, you know, to do something that's outside of your normal work hours, I think is a huge piece. I mean, just over continue to emphasize that, hey, I realize and acknowledge that you lead a life outside of this organization, whether you're a church or at work or whatever, and realize that there's so much more facets and more variables to somebody's life that makes them who they are, and realizing that, hey, or sharing a personal story. I mean, just being personal and building those relationships, I think, is a huge asset.
I think one final thing that comes to mind for me anyway is just that explicit permission to one or two people to shoot you down. So either to say the way you handled that was out of line, your attitude, you're reflecting this, your team is seeing you this way. Somebody who you will listen to, who you've given permission to, and who you will not fight with. You'll accept that feedback, or you will at least accept it at first and think through it. Who can put their finger on the areas where you are failing and say, you need to work on this, because you will not do it yourself. You will miss it. I will miss it. You know, people can't evaluate themselves well. So it has to be an intentional, practical step to give somebody permission to say, fix this problem.
Everybody needs two truth tellers.
Or if you're on our team, you have like six of them, because we all love to tell each other what we do wrong.
Exactly. So I would say we have no problem.
If
everyone
you want to grow and serve
teller.
In leadership, join the team here at Lifeway, and we will tell you all of the ways that you need to improve.
Exposit truth to you daily.
Oh, yeah. A culture of healthy tension.
Feedback is a gift. If someone gives you feedback,
and it's the gift,
you should say thank you.
That's right. Well, thank you, and thank you both for all of your feedback. You're a delight. Listeners, I hope this was helpful to you. I hope that we offered you something practical, as well as maybe some frameworks and mindsets to think about these things. Just some ways to frame out a vague concept in a way that you can begin to implement a little bit. We really appreciate you listening. Jump on lifeway.com/leadership to find our blog, to find additional podcast episodes, to find the ebook that Todd wrote called Developing Your Leadership Pipeline. We have an abundance of resources there. So check that out. That's also where we have the show notes. So any resources that were mentioned, any links, you can find that there. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next time.
Don't forget to check out Southeastern Seminary's numerous education and training opportunities to help you grow in ministry. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more. That's sebts.edu/5LQ.